Okay. Now, Phil, in addition to researching at an academic level, what happened in the past political assassinations, and we say each week how it affects today's news. If all of this research that I've done for 9 years could save one life, hopefully many lives, but if it saves one life, it will be worth it to have felt that I accomplished that much in my lifetime. And I'm going to take time now. We're going up to the killing up in San Jose of James Carr this last week, and I'm going to take about 5 minutes now to talk about Hugo Pinnell, who's on trial in Salinas, because I don't want him killed. And if the Department of Corrections knows that people are onto their methods and systems, and we can publicly discuss what's happening to Pinnell out there, maybe they'll cool down on their attack on him. Pinnell has been in the prison system for 1965 and went in originally with a charge of rape that went from 3 years to life. He's the one person out at the prison who has been admired by the black, the brown, and the white, and he's very strong in cooling racial dissension. And the prison administration do not appreciate his handling, being able to handle these various people in the way that he does. He has a talent for doing that. He's known widely, is for a long time, that he's beaten continuously at the Department of Corrections, that he more than any other prisoner, he's beaten by the guards.
That's pretty
Yeah, this can
heavy
be
statement.
documented by people who go in and out of the prison system, and the information I get is from somebody that has worked closely with the prison system, so closely that when the original shootout came, the intention to kill George Jackson, which failed the first time, she was aware of it, and people that work with her are aware of it. I have sources of information from people working at Soledad that he has been beaten continuously more than any other prisoner. He's
Well, if people know about it, why has it been
They don't know
continuing?
about it. This is why I'm using the information.
Okay.
It's hard to get access to the people about this. If they want to know about his beatings, go out to Salinas now. And at the court yesterday, he showed the welts and sores and marks where the guards had beat him up this week, and showed it to the jury. He's one of the San Quentin Six that is flown up every week for the hearings, the shootout, the breakout where George Jackson was killed in San Quentin. He was up there at the time. And he's on trial down here for killing a guard. He's at the Adjustment Center in Soledad. His trial's going on right now, and you can attend it at the courthouse in Salinas. He appears every Friday for hearings in Marin County. This is the second week of his trial where he's charged with the death of Correctional Officer McCarthy. The trouble is that the Soledad brothers were acquitted of the charge of killing a guard at the correction centers just this last month. But Pinnell isn't getting the publicity. Even the Monterey Herald doesn't have a reporter out there. You might go out there and cover a news story of this trial, Phil, and just get an eye-opener of what's happening. The Monterey Herald isn't even sending a reporter out to cover this. It's not in the papers every day. So that I'm using my radio time very gladly to tell people about Pinnell before we get up to. We're going to talk about a death that could happen and then one that happened in San Jose this week. And they are related to the same system that's coming down. Three witnesses heard yesterday have in the correction systems, three different witnesses testified in the trial that they heard in the Department of Corrections that they're going to get Pinnell, they're going to kill him, just like there was talk of getting Jackson. And verified witnesses would hear all along that they're going to kill Jackson, they're going to kill him. Well, Tuesday, three officers from the correction department attacked Pinnell in the adjustment center. The name of one of them was Kaiser, the other was Sergeant Danner. And the head of the adjustment center, Mr. McKendrick, and the associate, Mr. Morris, supervised while three officers beat up Hugo Pinnell in the Department of Corrections Center. And he went to court. He was badly beaten, and when he went to court Wednesday, he showed the jury his welts and beatings across his chest. Now, Mr. Reinhardt is a guard from the Soledad Correctional Center who escorts Hugo Pinnell to the courtroom. And during the recess of the court on Wednesday, he moved to Pinnell and offered him and said, "Hey, man, I want to slip you a gun so you can liberate yourself." This is similar to the George Jackson shootout kind of thing, and Pinnell refused. And then the guard was heard to say, "I'd give anything to see this gun unloaded. I'd like to see your brains blown out," said to Pinnell, and Pinnell wouldn't fall for the trap. And Pinnell went into the court after the recess and told the people around and his family in the front row what took place, that he was offered a gun, you know, for this shootout. There was a book review of George Jackson's new book, Blood in My Eye. It's a review by a man named Bob Barber. And I'm going to read three paragraphs from the book review of George Jackson and bring it back to the Pinnell case. It said, Soledad Brother, the first book that George Jackson wrote, sold over 300,000 copies and established George as a leading theoretician and strategist of the American radical movement. He was considered such a threat to the California prison system that black prisoners who gave him the raised fist salute were thrown into the hole for isolation. Blood in My Eye, his new book, confirms the theory that the state of California had more to lose in allowing George to continue to act and write than it did from the repercussions which resulted from the killing of him. This is in the book review.
Where did this review appear?
This came out for the L.A. News Advocate. And there are many people onto the fact that the California prison system did kill George Jackson, and they had more to lose in allowing him to write than they did from killing him. Another paragraph of the book review says, in recognizing that many segments of the left are unwilling or unable to join the people's army, Jackson called for a struggle based on participation from each according to his ability. Each partisan outside the vanguard element should work at radicalizing in the area of their natural environment, the places where they pursue their normal lives. End quote. I think in that term that what I'm doing or what you're doing with this broadcast, what people could do is take from their own lives, go out in your natural environment, go to the trial at Pinnell and see him and see the welts and see how the guards are treating him at this trial and how they're offering him a gun to have a shootout, which guarantees his own death, march the parallels to the George Jackson thing, mumbling about wanting to kill him because he wouldn't accept the weapon, you see. The book review has one more paragraph. As theoretician, writer, and tactical leader, George Jackson has taken his place with Malcolm X and Elridge Cleaver as a key figure in the political growth of the new revolutionary movement in America. That so many whites can trace their politicization through Malcolm's autobiography to Soul on Ice to the Soledad Brothers indicates the movement draws inspiration from the lives and writings of the blacks. Now, this particular point that I want to mention is Pinnell was known among the Mexican-American, the white, and the black as being cohesive and bringing them together. And part of our system is to split these people into groups. They don't want this cohesiveness, and they don't want these superior minds that are evolving in spite of oppression and prison system telling the outside world what life is really like. They're becoming like Gandhi after his time in jail and Martin Luther King, in a combination of political experience and genius and deep-seated religion and care of brotherhood, the message is very strong and it's coming across to all people. And too many messages are going to topple a system that can't handle this kind of intelligence, this human intelligence, a resource we're talking about, that each one has. And the system comes down on these people. Now, there was a tight order of the judge in San Jose on the news.
So tight that not even our fellow newsmen were able to find out anything about it.
Anything about what's happening at the trial of Angela Davis. And the reason the muzzle comes down so tight is Angela Davis's trial was moved to San Jose, and she said she wouldn't have a fair trial in almost any city of America, and it would be hard to find one in California. Since her trial started, there's been a jail breakout, which was staged, where a man was killed on the streets.
Wait, so you said it was staged?
Well, I believe it was staged. The man who broke out of San Quentin earlier was moved down. He's an expert at jailbreaking. He was moved down to the area where Angela was, and while her trial was just going, these men flew the coop, killed on the streets. It's a very dramatic coincidence at best, and we could maybe do a show on San Jose law enforcement. Again, it ties into the California system.
But you're saying that a man who was experienced in jailbreaks was moved down purposefully?
Was moved from San Quentin. Well,
To lead this thing to give them help in planning it?
Because he's dead, we don't know, but it's like taking a man who's a master at breaking safes and putting him at a particular time and place where another safe, if it's broken, would expose one more part of a system. it's pretty much of a coincidence that just when Angela's trial gets started, that two people are shot on the street, almost in view of the jury, one man in front of the system, and this James Carr, right in San Jose, linked with, by through the media and press, to Angela Davis, the headline saying he's a radical, the headline saying James Carr stockpiles weapons. The news is smearing her into a whole repetition of violence at the time that the prosecution is showing movies of the van and the people spread out and the bodies bleeding. The violence is occurring in San Jose, and the suggestion that there's Molotov cocktails in the neighborhood's in danger. And this killing of James Carr that took place last week at this particular moment while Angela's trial is going on and the escape thing make the news media wonder. People are asking questions, and the answers to these questions would be detrimental to the prosecution in Angela's case. But the judge now puts a muzzle. Now that the actions happen, he puts the muzzle. They let the smear out, like Angela, the attorney, you know, for the Carr family, said, you know, that it should be against the law, the conscience of these people for putting the news that they've put in the last week about James Carr. They should search their conscience. And now that they've put those lies, and I'll read a few of the lies, then there's a news blackout. Only the lies got printed. Now they can't refute them. See, the lies come out on the murder of Carr, but nothing that can refute it comes out. And that is a very dangerous problem, too. You see, it happened up in San Jose when John Smith was killed, and all the things that would smear Smith for being the, you know, reason for his own death or trying to turn the thing around on why he was killed are printed in the paper, and then as the truth leaks out, there's a tight news blackout. And that pattern, again, like executive immunity, if you print untruths, which the defense is saying are going to alter the opinion of the jury, they have to, and terrible lies in 1 week are poured into the media. Who decides at that point that you can't print a denial of these lies? Now they can't do that.
Well, the assumption of many people in the Angela Davis case is that this tight muzzle that's been placed on the attorneys is something to hide the truth from the people about the trial.
Well,
to protect, in other words, the government. But well, it is possible that that there is some reason to protect the defendant's right also, isn't there not?
You have to protect the defendant's right. You see, each one of the jurors were taken off separately and asked by Judge Aronson, you know, what was your opinion, you know, of the news in this past week? And of course they had opinions. I mean, they can read the paper and they have an idea of what's happening. And if everything they read was a lie, if the people they're writing about say all of that's untrue, this is terrible, and you should search your conscience for what you're doing to Angela and to the case and what the effect it's achieving. And the minute they speak up and the attorneys for Angela speak up, then the judge says, no more news. You can't publish. You see, you can't tell the story. Well, April the 6th, James Carr was shot and killed in San Jose. And Carr was a close friend and former cellmate of George Jackson. And the killers waited ambush. They shot six shots, and he had received death threats for several weeks. He was described as being very brilliant, another bright person coming along. He had studied mathematics. He was a good husband, a father, married, living with his family. Last year, he was at the University of Santa Cruz. He was majoring in mathematics, and he was leading seminars on prison life. Well, you know, there's certain people that don't want you knowing what happened in prison life. I'm going to get off from Carmen, that a record of Ronald Reagan's veto in California, it's described Ronald Reagan vetoes California back to the Stone Age. But he has vetoed a bill that was introduced to get into the prison system to study the state prisons. And he vetoed the bill by Legislature Murphy on the grounds it was to get in prison reform. And the governor based his veto on the ground that state prisons already have an effective procedure. Well, it can't be an effective procedure. All these cases that are going to go to trial are going to be overturned. You have political patsies. You have staged murders. You have perfectly brilliant, literate people writing about the system. The deal for an ombudsman was turned down last year, and in the paper this week there was a plea. It's going up to the Assembly again. Frank Murphy, Jr. of Santa Cruz is putting before the Assembly a plea for an ombudsman to get into the state of California prison system. And Governor Reagan said, we have a perfectly adequate system. And he says that prisoners have to learn. This is what Reagan, they said that prisoners have to learn to handle their grievances within the system, just as they will have to do on the outside. Well, the prison staff is run by ex-military that have come home from Vietnam or served the services. And the outside, a sensitive prisoner wouldn't have to rub elbows with military if they didn't want. They're impersonal. The outside is a personal life. In the prison system, they have a drug traffic and a homosexual problem forced upon married men and men that weren't drugged before they got in there. And they have isolation and hole as punishment. When they get out, they don't live in a room locked up in a hole with no light or food or contact or toilets or bath. The outside isn't like the inside. They're not living a life inside that they're adjusting to the outside. So the ombudsman thing has to go through. But when a man like James Carr is studying and having seminars, intelligent discussion on prison life, you can see why he's a danger to the existing system. Now, Carr was an admirer of George Jackson, Huey Newton. He shared a cell with George. He said he started me reading. He taught me basic grammar, basic math. And in the Adjustment Center at Tracy, California, Jackson and James Carr shared a cell, and they found that some men didn't receive money from their families. Nobody cared about them. Nobody wrote to them. And some other men got cigarette money that trickled in. So they set up a system where they would collectively pool the money that everybody would have equal. Whatever they got a particular week, they would pull it together and share it. And when they came to that kind of an activity, because of that, George Jackson was transferred to severe restriction at San Quentin Prison. Because of the most basic humanistic needs, he was transferred and separated from James Carr, from Tracy to San Quentin for a very
just for that for the establishing that collective
for establishing that collective a basic need to share a cigarette or a candy bar with a man who hears from nobody. They broke up this humanistic relationship that was happening. Now the news came out, James Carr was gunned down,
and you said that the press rebroadcast, reprinted lies.
Well, I'm going to give you five lies, and then we'll go back to the news blackout. One of the lies was that Richard Hodges, the attorney for James Carr, gave an interview that said some people thought Carr was a CIA, others thought he was a radical, and I can think of a lot of reasons why someone would want to kill him. Hodges is incensed. He didn't say his client. You know, he isn't throwing out, oh, of course Carr was killed. A lot of people wanted him. He didn't say that at all. I'm sure the attorney, Richard Hodges, has a pretty good idea of why James Carr was killed, and he didn't say this at all. The second statement in the press was Angela Davis stayed at the home of Carr's mother-in-law, Mrs. Hammer. When she got out of jail and had her bail, she lived at that home. This is untrue. She doesn't know James Carr. Angela Davis does not even know James Carr. George Jackson knew James Carr. Jonathan Jackson may have used Mrs. Hammer's car. Angela Davis did not know James Carr.
But it's still possible she could have stayed there.
She didn't stay there. You see, this is at the time Angela's trial is going out. The headlines are saying weapons found in the roof of this home, radical is shot, you know, and it's sort of a repetition of a potential shootout that this dangerous member of our society, an ex-convict, is found with all these weapons. You know, they emphasize. When I talk about the intellectual side, that wasn't played up. I had to get that in the small print. The headlines carried the other print, you see.
So you're saying Angela Davis didn't know James Carr.
She didn't. She knew of it, but she never stayed at the home of Mrs. Hammer when she got out of jail, and she didn't know James Carr. She knew of him. And then the paper went on to say that the reason for the murder could be a falling out between Huey Newton and James Carr. Now, this is one area where the CIA is very big, and I can document that by the Lewis Tackwood charges in Los Angeles, the provocateur. They want to break up anything going between all the black people between each other. I spoke to a newspaper man in L.A., a writer, a man that I met through a contact when I was trying to reach Lewis Tackwood, and he tried to give me the business, you know, well, you know, Newton could have done this because he had a fight with Carr a few weeks ago. Men employed of the Central Intelligence Agency throw one group against the other without any documentation existing. In fact, to splinter these groups, they're splintering the Muslims, they're splintering these gang wars of the mafia, they're splintering the black people by throwing in agents to turn against each other. And then the population at large throws up its hands and says, well, what can you do? That's a fight between them. There's no documentation at all that Huey Newton wanted to kill Carr. And there's rumors, and there's very good foreknowledge. I had a call, you know, months ago, I had a message about a man who was assigned, you know, to do a hit on Cesar Chavez. That's why I did this show on Chavez. And a friend of mine into the prison system in California, into the trials and things occurring here, was very concerned 2 months ago that something was going to fall down on Popeye Jackson and the prisoner union and Carr, and the men would be marked to be killed. And we know who's doing this thing, and we're trying to get to Sacramento, the proper officials, because Carr is one of those people marked to be killed, was killed, and it isn't by the factions that the media is throwing out. Not at all. Another lie, see the headlines of April the 8th say, James Edward Carr, Roots in Radicalism. Another headline on the 10th, Slain Man's Home Yields Two Rifles. Now the purpose of these headlines is to make him guilty for his own death. That if you can say he has weapons, and you can say he's a radical, and you can say he's an ex-convict, therefore it equals he should die or be murdered. You see, none of this, they take all the obvious things that sit around. Sure, black radicals or ex-convicts or who get death threats every day of their life would have a weapon, you see. But that doesn't mean that they arrange their own killing, you know. It's hiding who's really doing the killing. And we will find these people now who are doing the killings, because it isn't that complicated any more than my being able to figure it out from where I sit. And the FBI now getting onto Yablonsky a year later will help the intelligence agencies and the federal government. Even they don't want that kind of help. We'll lead them to the killers, the researchers. We'll do this and force them to admit the truth. Now, the important thing, one of the important things that I have to mention about this particular murder is that Lewis Tackwood, I mentioned him on many other shows, Lewis Tackwood is the brother-in-law of James Carr, who was killed. He is married, Lewis Tackwood is married to the sister of James Carr. And for those of you who never heard my show or heard what a provocateur is, Lewis Tackwood is a man who worked for the Los Angeles Police Department for 10 years. He became a police informer, and he worked in plot and counterplot. He surfaced with a news conference October the 18th, 1971, and said crimes are part of the game. He's been in intrigue and crime, and it's like chess. And he made some startling statements, and one of them goes back to the Marin County shootout and Angela Davis in the Soledad trial. He said that the conspiracy, criminal conspiracy section of the Los Angeles Police Department had foreknowledge of last year's Marin County Courthouse kidnap escape attempt and George Jackson's fatal escape attempt from San Quentin Prison, and allowed both to proceed despite a certainty that lives would be lost. Now, if the Los Angeles County Police Department had information of the foreknowledge of the shootout, there was a conspiracy. And they're trying to pin it, you see, on Angela Davis now. So the killing of Carr has something to do with his brother-in-law and his knowledge of what took place, because Carr could have been a witness at Angela Davis's trial.
It's interesting, because we did a whole show with the Tackwood story.
That's right.
And I wasn't aware that Tackwood was related to Carr in any way.
Well, this is what... Are you taken back by that one?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, it's a pretty... See, the link gets a little tighter every week that we're together, Phil. I think you're beginning to see certain things put it clicking that I'm trying to say that are happening, both before they happen and after, you see.
Yeah, it does make you wonder.
Doesn't that make you wonder that this particular man, James Carr, is killed, you know, just while the trial's going on, and if he's a brother-in-law of Tackwood, and Tackwood has said that the L.A. had foreknowledge of this killing.
Yeah, let me just pick out one of your... Because this is May, and I'm Phil, and the story about Tackwood did not come out of the Canoga Park Underground Syndicate or anything. The story was printed the October 18th, 1971, the story about Tackwood in the San Francisco Chronicle, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with. It is a respected newspaper in the United States, and the story is about Tackwood. Also is on the LA Times service. And Tackwood's relationship to Carr kind of throws a new twist into the story.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen anyone, any reporters, dig up that connection.
Well, it was brought out in this week that in the Chronicle, in the Santa Fe Mercury, in the killing of James Carr. Down below, it had a little paragraph that James Carr happened to be the brother-in-law of Lewis Tackwood of Los Angeles. But it doesn't tell you that Lewis Tackwood is talking about the foreknowledge of the prison escape. Now, there was an interview of the San Quentin officials this week in the Angela Davis trial. And the subject came out, if you had information, you know, when a man is captured, like a judge in Marin County and people in the courthouse, and if you want to get the prisoners are escaping, would you kill everybody? Would the guards kill everybody? And they said, yes, we'd kill everybody. They said if they took a woman or a husband as a hostage and 20 people in the courtroom, would you kill all 20 to get the prisoner who has them as hostage? He said it is the order of the California Department of Corrections to kill all 20. Now, this is another thing that we have to write up in detail or length, that this law should be changed. You know, these people...
Or policy, really.
The policy is not law. The policy should be changed, like the Attica thing. That it was just the slaughtering, unnecessarily, of these guards, you know, because the hostages' requests were reasonable. You see, and these men had made reasonable requests over and over again. They're just continuously turned down. But the point is that the L.A. Police Department had foreknowledge of this particular thing. They could have kept the members of this shootout or escape plan isolated and eliminated all of this. But a legal way to kill George Jackson or Jonathan Jackson or lock up Angela Davis is to let the thing happen. And that's when it's interesting. Tackwood surfaced because he claimed that he stopped being a police informer and got tired of killing and being on the killing end and turning against his own brother when he found out about the San Diego plan, which was he was to hire radicals in San Diego for the convention. It's called Squad 19, and he was to provoke violence at the 1972 Republican National Convention that would be blamed on the leftists. And the object would be to create a situation which would permit the president to invoke special emergency powers leading to the arrest and detention of all political activists in the country. And Tackwood said, I surfaced because of this, but it could be that he surfaced because he had foreknowledge, he said he did, of the Marin shootout. And when the people that he knew were involved, like if Carr was, his brother-in-law was a cellmate of Jackson, and he knew what Carr was doing on the prison systems, and when he saw the Jackson brothers killed, then he spoke up. He may have just had too much because it was part of the family. It became a family thing at the time he surfaced, you see. He surfaced right after the Marin shootout and the killing of George Jackson. That was in September that George Jackson was killed, and then in October, he surfaced. And he's the brother-in-law of the man who was inspired by Jackson. You're shaking your head, Phil. It's a very important web of information. I don't even have time to go into Chief of Police Davis in Los Angeles and a tape recording of another provocateur, Martinez. We'll do it next week, Frank Martinez, who has surfaced. There's a tape recording of an interview of Chief of Police Davis in Los Angeles and Sheriff Peter Pitches on how they're breaking up the Mexican-American black community, and they brag on the tape, we're running them out of town, and we ran Ron Kering out of town, and how we're breaking up all these Mexican-American...
A tape recording of it?
Yeah, there's a tape recording. We'll do this. We'll start the show next week.
Is their office bugged by the Chicanos down
there?
No,
they did on the air. They bragged how we're running them out of town, and then that brings back the allegation of Tackwood of how he was sent to break up Ron Kering and his group for the L.A. Police Department. So we've done a lot on provocateurs, and time is running out. I want to talk about the plea McKissick is making for the reversal of the Sirhan case. He was very noble this week.
Yeah, we have just a couple minutes.
Yeah. Well, I want to, it's a shame to stop now, but the hour's running out, because the state, let me wind it up in a summary. There is a national conspiracy that existed to kill the person elected to represent the majority in 1960, that was President John Kennedy. He was murdered in office, and his brother was running as a candidate in 1968, and he was murdered during the election time and as a senator, and there was every indication that he would give Richard Nixon a hard time at the election poll. There was a conspiracy to kill Robert Kennedy. The conspiracy is hidden by the Attorney General of our state now, Evel Younger, and Robert Houghton, chief of all law enforcement in California, and Chief of Police Davis in Los Angeles. They hold the lid on these conspiracies, and they have each elevated in power and position since the murder of Robert Kennedy. The local level, the Marin shootout, the Soledad trial, the Angela Davis case, are all manufactured evidence. They are using decoys to do these crimes. There's planted evidence, there's foreknowledge. the gun that was put in George Jackson's hair, supposedly that's one big lie. The man who could tell the truth on that, Bingham, is for all practical purposes dead. The lawyer's dead, just like Jack Ruby's dead, or Lee Harvey Oswald's dead. And this week we saw the death of one other man, James Carr, and the blood is on our hands, yours and mine, every day that we don't do something. We can do a lot this week. You can write to the congressman, the assemblyman in Sacramento on the ombudsman thing before the prison. You can push that through, and you can, if the ballot gets on the death penalty, work night and day to get that turned away. Write to Frank Murphy in Santa Cruz that you want someone to examine the California prison system. If anybody goes into the California prison system and really examines it, they will find that my work on the presidential conspiracies is accurate, and that Sirhan and these people should have a right to tell what happened. The prison system is isolating them from the truth.
Okay, for the past hour, you've been listening to Dialogue Assassination with political research specialist Mae Russell. I'm Phil Kogan.